the U.S. lead in general aviation. Could we be close to losing that too? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller, flight school entrepreneur in the Buffalo, New York area, and publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We get together to talk about the state of the flight training industry as regards general aviation and safety topics in general most Mondays here. And Bob, welcome in.
Well, thanks, Paul. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's talk about, I'm looking at the draft copy of Over the Airwaves for November, and I'm not sure, I thought at first that this was really from you, because after 6 years of kind of poking aviation in the ribs over some issues, your top article is headlined, "We're the Best." Where is that coming from?
Well, you know, I was beginning to think about where we have been in the last decade in general aviation compared to around the world. And I receive lots of email correspondence now from OTA readers from other countries who are saying to me, Bob, you know, you guys over there in the U.S. really do have it a whole lot better than we have, say, in Europe or in other parts of the country, other parts of the world, and Asia in particular. And I got to thinking that we do have it we do have it well here in the United States. This is really the best place in the world to be flying. And but just because we're the best, it's a little bit like being the best horse in the glue factory. By that, I mean, we're good, but are we really that good? Are we vulnerable as an industry to seeing our own extinction down the road? And I got to thinking about other U.S. industries when we were really the leader of the world in the auto industry and in steel, where now all of these products are being offshored, and we're not the leaders that we used to be. And I was trying to find ways where we could specifically look to improve in what we're doing, and the areas that desperately need help, even though we are best in the world, we're still suffering over 300 fatal wrecks a year in general aviation. We're still seeing half the new student starts. These are students that start to obtain their pilot certificate. They drop out, half of them, one out of every two drop out before reaching their private pilot check ride. There are reasons for both of these, and I wanted to kind of highlight those reasons.
When you talk about Europe, Germany, you're talking about an environment where you really have to love to fly to be a GA pilot, because between all the regulations that are kind of a patchwork across Europe, even with what the EU has tried to do to pull it together, and the taxes and the fees and all that stuff, you know, you really have to love it over there to do it. Do we have any idea how their accident rate is compared to ours in terms of per 100,000 hours?
That's a very good question, Paul, and I don't have an answer to that question. I just don't know. It would be a curious thing to find out. My critics say to me, you know, Bob, if we overregulate our industry, if, for example, we require an annual flight review as opposed to one every 2 years, we're going to do nothing but regulate ourselves out of business. And that's a valid argument if it's allowed to be taken to extremes. And we see that approaching extremes over in Europe and in other countries where it is regulated to the point that it's just not worth it. But there are things that we can do in this country that will improve the performance of pilots by adding regulation, but not too extreme. Unfortunately, we see regulations going in the opposite direction. We see an easing of the regulations to the point that I think it's going to be manifested in an increased accident rate. Let's look at the sport pilot program, for example. It's a wonderful program. We teach sport pilots. But the fact that the FAA has dumbed down the curriculum to say that you can qualify as a sport pilot with just 20 hours of instruction, when for 65 years we've been requiring a minimum of 40 hours to teach a person how to fly a J3 Cub. That's an example where we've dumbed down the regulations, I presume, in order to bring more people into the program. The latest example of this is the fact that to become an A&P mechanic, it takes some 3,000 hours of on-the-job training or several years of trade school work to qualify. Now you can become an A&P sport pilot, limiting your application of your skills to sport pilot aircraft with just 150 hours of training. Again, an example of dumbing down the regulations for some reason that escapes me, despite the fact that we have this fatal accident rate that remains unabated. We need to maintain, not only maintain our standard, but in some cases increase the standard in order to achieve that level of safety that's going to protect our industry.
Well, Bob, you used an example, too, of another industry in which much higher standards are set. We'll get to that after the break. My guest is Bob Miller. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about how we're the best in terms of general aviation activity here in the U.S., but how we dare not take that for granted and what we might do about it. And Bob, you mentioned in Over the Airwaves for November that you used an example of what is required of school bus operators and compare that to what's required of pilots. I think that would be a good comparison to share with our listeners.
Well, that's true. I one of our students is, in fact, a school bus driver for a local public school district, and she's just working on her sport pilot certificate now, wrapping it up. And we were going through Part 61 and the currency requirements to maintain a pilot certificate. And I mentioned that the flight review requirement, 1 hour of ground and 1 hour of flight every 24 months was all that was required to maintain the certificate. And she looked puzzled. And I asked, you know, what's wrong? And she said, are you kidding me? She said, in order to maintain my license as a New York State public school bus driver, I have to attend 8 hours of ground instruction and pass 2 actual driving performance tests every year. Now, this is an individual, granted, who's driving the most precious commodity we as parents have, and that's our children. But we as pilots are putting our children in our own airplane, and the law requires a biennial flight review, a flight review every 2 years. The differences are appalling, and I think that given the accident rate that we continue to experience remains unabated, well over 300 accidents a year, there's something amiss here, and the only way that we're going to be able to address that, unfortunately, is to tighten the regulations when it comes to currency training. Unfortunately, we have our big membership organizations who are just that. They're big membership organizations, and they will aggressively fight anything that represents what they perceive as a burden on their membership, and will stonewall it to the point where who's going to drive the process? Who is going to tighten the regulation or recommend that they be tightened? It's an uphill struggle. The FAA, I'm sure, has fought battles with these groups over the years, and we're lucky to have what we have in terms of regulatory control.
You know, it's interesting. Randy Babbitt, the new FAA administrator, spoke a couple weeks ago at NBAA 2009 in Orlando, and in his opening comments, he talked about something like 3.5 million hours between fatal accidents in corporate aviation, and talked about how that's great, but even one is too many. And I have to it made me kind of chuckle because out of the corner of my ear, I was hearing the Air Safety Foundation saying, you know, 300 fatal accidents a year, that's great, but even 300 is too many. I have to wonder, you know, there doesn't seem to be any shyness on the FAA's part in regulating, you know, commercial traffic or corporate, you know, business jets or charters or those particular areas at a level that high.
Well, that's because of Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point. And I use this as an example of a tipping point. Airline accidents and corporate accidents reached a tipping point. That means that they had created or engendered enough public outrage to demand that changes be done. Look at 3407, Continental 3407 now, that's going to likely change the requirements to become a first officer under Part 121. The individual will have to hold an ATP rating, which means 1,500 hours instead of 50 hours. This law is likely to pass. We don't have an outrage at general aviation. It's because we suffer 350 or so fatal accidents. Each fatal accident generally involves a couple of people. So let's say 700 or 800 people die in general aviation airplanes, but they die one at a time, unfortunately. And if we lost 700 people in one fell swoop, there would be a major public outcry to do something about general aviation. The other reason, and while I believe that AOPA and EAA do wonderful things for us, they are a very, very staunch opponent to tighter regulation because it will represent a burden on their membership. And after all, they are a membership organization, not necessarily a safety organization. So Part 121, Airline Transport Association, I mean, I don't believe they're nearly as powerful a force when it comes to lobbying against regulations as our own AOPA.
Well, you know, I admire the work of Bruce Landsberg and the Air Safety Foundation. At the same time, I appreciate the rock and the hard place they find themselves between. And Bob, we always appreciate your insights, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
Find the latest issue of Bob Miller's monthly newsletter at www.overtheairwaves.com. While you're there, you can subscribe free to get notice by email when the new issues come out. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.